Today on our Tech for Business podcast, Todd, our COO and CISO, and Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity, are joining us again to talk about our home network. And I'm going to throw it to Todd first because he found an article that kind of brought up this conversation. So, Todd, what did you find online that spurred this whole talk today?
Yeah, well, real briefly, just to kind of put context around this is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And I found this article that came up and it went viral. So it's probably not a surprise to a lot of people out there. But for those that isn't, this is new, as there was an article, and I think it was on Newsweek or something along those lines, where they had talked about an individual who was working or looking up at what's going on in their network. And they found that their washing machine was using gigs of data every month. And it got me thinking of, if we have things like that happening with smart devices, what is most people's security, if any, do they have in their home network? And that was kind of how we started out what today is going to look like. And we can dig further into that. And just for the record, Samsung, which was a Samsung device, has already patched that vulnerability. So they fixed it. It doesn't use gigs of data any longer. My initial reaction when reading the article is, why do I need a smart washing machine? But that, then we can get into that discussion a little bit later.
I'm not going to let Samsung off the hook that easily. They also just announced if you have one of their smart fridges, you're going to start getting ads. So while you're trying to grab your milk, go look at the next ad as well. So,
and things are going to do, lock your fridge door until you watch this ad and you have to pay for
wait 30 seconds
to grab ad-free your TV or...
With the world of AI coming, it is interesting to kind of just briefly, since we're already on tangents, I'll just keep going.
Yep.
What does that look like, right? Do you get ads for, hey, have you tried this cool recipe by whatever, Lipton onion soup? You can make great burgers. I don't know. And then you can create your grocery list off of it and they get paid and everybody's excited. Anyways.
This podcast didn't stand a chance if we're on tangents right after the intro, so.
All day. I came prepared with a tangent because on that question of who needs a smart laundry washer and dryer, I looked up some crazy smart devices. So the number one that I kept coming across was a smart egg tray. Like, it tells you when your eggs are gonna spoil and when you need to buy more. I saw a smart umbrella, which... if I'm using an umbrella, don't I already know that it's raining? But apparently you can get a smart umbrella.
Wind speeds, cool? Maybe? Yeah, I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, either. I have no idea. I think its biggest feature is it'll ping you if you left it behind.
On a rainy day.
You forgot me.
Kind of going down the path. I mean, I jokingly, with the washing machine, I was like, well, what are you going to do with it? Is it going to tell you that the load is done? What else would it do? Which I get, I guess, if it's on a different floor. But do most people go, oh, I got this alert, I'm going to go run and change it immediately? It's probably not going to change your life a whole lot. I used to have a smart fridge that had a Keurig built into it. And I could tell my Google machine, hey, tell the refrigerator to heat up the water. So it would heat up the water and I could make a coffee. It was so inconvenient. I was like, this is the dumbest thing ever. And so I removed the functionality. But at the time, I was like, well, what can I do? Not much.
I will say there are people that tend to fall really in two camps, right? It's the, it's the people that love playing with tech and they want to do it. And then there's the other people that don't want anything to do with it at all, right? And obviously, there's a gray area in between, but for the most part, like, home and tech is often polarized. And I work in tech all day, every day. I used to have the full network rack, you know, next to me, you know, with all the fans whirring and segmenting my network like crazy. I don't want to deal with tech when I get home as well. You know, I'd rather be outside spending time with kids or mowing the lawn or something along those lines, right? I don't want to have to constantly fix my own network. So my home network is very simple, right? I have the modem for the cable. Then I have my router and I have a mesh system so I can reach across the house. And then I have a couple smart devices You know, I do have the video doorbell. I won't say names because that's also often polarized. But, you know, I'll have some of those. I do have some of the smart speakers so I can, you know, ask it to play music or something along those lines. And we do have a couple Apple TVs as well. So that way, and I do that one intentionally because getting back to people will upload just random data. Your smart TV is regularly sending off data about the usage that you use it on. Apple TVs is not, you know, immune to that. They are doing that as well. But personally, Apple has my data for elsewhere. I'd rather try and limit how many vendors have all that data.
Eventually, we're going to talk about security, but we're kind of on this data conversation. With all of these different devices, I've got my little egg tray and my cameras and my smart washer and dryer and toilet, whatever else is out there. All of that is collecting data. It's true. I found it online. It's a real thing.
I believe you. I mean, I could think of during the COVID thing where how they were getting a lot of their statistics and I can go, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Exactly.
I will say there's one common phrase is if it's free, you are the product. And it's because they're usually making money off of your data on the back end. Right. So we see this, like, let's say Gmail, right? It's free to use it. You don't have to pay for any of that. But they're selling usage and ads and, you know, or YouTube, right? It's free to use YouTube, but you get delivered ads and they're paying for that. Same thing goes with some of these smart technologies. They are often sold as loss leaders or cheap. So again, I said I'm not letting Samsung off the hook that easily. I technically do have one of their dishwashers. We'll see how long it lasts. I know there's some reliability issues there. So, but for the value of the dishwasher, when you do a stare and compare in the store, hey, I could get all these extra features at the same price or maybe even a little bit less. They'll do big sales on some of those. They will sometimes try and make money on the data on the back end and how it's used. And, you know, oftentimes smart tech will also say, hey, can we allow it to scan the rest of the environment because we want to be able to connect to other smart devices, right? What's to stop it from picking up other networks in the environment and shipping that data back as well? There's a reason why your premium appliances often are not smart, right? They're built with high-grade materials, and they just oftentimes don't have the tech in it, right? They don't make residual money off of that sale.
Todd, maybe you can explain what some of the biggest security concerns are. I mean, we've talked a lot about all these fun different things and data privacy, but what are some of the biggest concerns when you are buying all of these new fancy tools?
Yeah, I think you guys kind of both hit on data, and I'll chime in on that real briefly, and then I'll move on quickly, I swear. It is worth mentioning, as Nate mentioned, is these people are typically trying to gather your information, and you typically get notified that, hey, we are going to collect this data, and people tend to click through it. So just be conscious that that is indeed happening. They almost always are trying to collect data about you, your habits, et cetera, and it helps them with other things. So back in the good old days when Roomba first came out, there was a lot of concerns about it being connected because they were saying, Roomba isn't there to collect the data to make sure it's more efficient in your house. It's trying to figure out the stuff you own so they can sell you other stuff. And I believe that was true back in the day with Pokemon Go as well, as that was the big concern. So all those things aside, I should also mention that my network's very similar to Nate's, do have firewalls in there too. So I believe in stateful firewalls. If you don't have one at home, that should be something that you're doing on a general basis. But there also are smart things like your gaming consoles and whatnot that are inevitably connected to your network. The concern with what's typically going on is a lot of the things we're focusing very heavily on smart devices, and they call them IoT devices, your TVs, your refrigerators, etc. They don't typically take into consideration a whole lot of security. They're designed to get up and running very quick, set up very quick to get rolling, and you have present a vulnerability into your own network. And before we started this podcast, by the way, I know we were kind of all over the place on the map, but I'm excited about this conversation because I think people tend to not think about security in their personal lives. And to me, this really kind of allows the connection of, oh, all those things that happen at the office, they happen because of this. And I don't do that at home. And so I am naturally vulnerable. So your IoT devices, they typically don't have security built into them. They don't typically get a lot of updates. Those updates aren't very designed for your benefit. They're designed for other things that we've already talked about. So you are inherently putting a lot of risk into entrances into your home, if you will. And I'm sure people have seen some of the negative things that go on where people are hijacking baby monitors and a variety of other stuff. Those things are real. That is a problem. So just kind of outlining, if there are risks associated, there is bad stuff happening and it does allow people to get into it. We don't typically see a ton of it because we don't support it when it comes to like people getting personally ransomed or having those kinds of attack happens. We don't work on that level. We work on a business level. So I don't have a ton of personal experience with that. So I couldn't tell you the prevalence of it. But one of the core things, and we'll get to this a little bit deeper, I'm sure I won't belabor this a whole lot, but one of my first things that I would say is make sure you're paying attention to those privacy things. And then I would recommend having a private network that's separate for all of your non-business stuff. So your business work laptop, your personal computers, those things should be on a separate network from your IoT, your thermostats, yeah, your door cameras, all that should be on a separate network. And if they get all commingled with the internet, whatever, they can go offline and your life won't be impacted. But losing your pictures, on the other hand, would be devastating for most individuals. Yeah.
That was going to be my number one recommendation as well, is in the world of IoT, keep it on its own network, because especially if you have stuff where you store it locally, right? Do you allow your Windows device to let other devices see its files, right? Do you have the network storage device for maybe it's a Plex media server or something along those lines, right? Are you keeping those things contained from something else, that unwanted scanning, right? Only you or your trusted device should be able to access that stuff. No, I know that's high level. Sometimes that can come into a little bit of an architecture challenge of, well, I wanted to see all my movies and my pictures on my TV, but my TV is connected to the smart speakers, right? And now you're getting into a little bit of a dilemma there, but general practice if you can.
You kind of mentioned there's these two different camps, the people who are like very low tech because they're kind of not afraid, but they know the concerns. And then there's some people like us who are aware of it, but we still want to have that high tech at home. Which is kind of worse, is having a bunch of devices set up properly with your appropriate network segmentations, or just having no tech at all and then having the other risks of someone breaking in or X, Y, and Z? I mean, which one do you think would be better or worse?
I don't think there's a wrong answer, honestly. I love tech, but I'm also actively sometimes trying to cut it out of my own life, right? And so, yes. I love business technology. Personal consumer stuff is the stuff I'm trying to cut out because I want to be more prevalent in my current space with my family, right? And so I was just talking to my spouse, I think it was 2 days ago, and I said, I have a smartwatch. I'm like, next time it comes around, I might go back to the Casio, right? I can't afford the Rolex, but get back to the analog watches, right? And stuff like that. So I think there's definitely value of those that are in the camp of, I don't want tech at home. The one concern I'd say is tech is going to continue in being involved, or, you know, evolving and being prevalent in everything. So at least stay aware of the possibilities of it and how tech can benefit you in life. But the people that spend all their time in tech, that's also an issue, right? It could be we don't care about our privacy at all, which I think, you know, at more of the global scale has big ramifications. I'm a big believer of, I don't want big data. However, also, sometimes if you're only ever playing with tech, you're not, again, present in your current space and the kind of the world. And I think that's also really important.
It wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't say it depends. So there it is. I would agree with Nate. I think there is no wrong answers. And I also agree that Nate's got a good point, is I think there'll be more of it in people's lives versus less. I personally am a nerd. I love all the technology. Smartwatches I don't get. I don't wear jewelry in any way. I did try smartwatches. They don't make a lot of sense to me. But other things I think are valuable. So just to kind of give you an example of what I'm saying, I think more is coming is... There's been announcements. I got one recently about Google is making changes with AI. So they're using Gemini as their AI tool set. And they're using it if you've got a smart speaker or a smart device in your home, whether it's Amazon or other, where they're starting to put things into them. Like, you hear glass breaking. Do we want to call the police? Do you have the smoke detector go off? Does it automatically call the fire department? Those things are coming. And there is... good reasons to do those types of things. I was telling Nate and Ariel before the podcast started that I'm not quite there yet. I understand the value proposition, but I'm not 100% bought in. Again, since there's no wrong answers, in my opinion, what you do then is do what you need to do to make sure that you're at least doing some things to keep it safe. Kind of going back to when we started this, when we started talking about smart devices, kind of a tangent that went off in my head immediately was, I have recently replaced my cell phone, and as I was going through it, I was making sure before I got rid of my old one that I had all the apps. I could log into them. Sometimes you get prompts to them if you got the security enabled and everything. And I could not believe how much time I spent logging into all the different applications that I have. And the reason why it took so long is I don't use a single password for all my stuff, which I think a lot of people still do, especially on something like it's my smartphone. I'm just going to use whatever this password. What are we, fall 2025 exclamation point.
Hey, me too.
So I'm going over to Nate's a little bit later and I'm going to start logging into all this stuff. There are things that you should be doing about it. And it is big, right? So, and I think that's true when it comes to a lot of the smart devices too. It could be a thermostat. It could be your wireless. It could be anything, right? Even a guest wireless is those passwords tend to be the same over and over again, which is the weakness that we have. And so in my personal opinion is you should be part two is segment. Number one, segment your network off so you got everything off that isn't critical on a separate network. Number two would be passwords. And again, this is blocking and tackling when it comes to the business world, but people don't think about it in their personal lives. It's all about convenience, removing friction, et cetera. And the answer I'd have to removing the friction is use as a password manager, and that will help you through the process of logging into all of your different devices with different passwords, which is great hygiene anyway.
Yeah, we're talking about some... quick wins, you know, that low-hanging fruit that you can, if you already have all of this stuff, what you can kind of do. So we're talking about setting up your network, making sure that you have a password manager and those complex passwords. Nate, what are some other really easy things to implement at home that can make sure that you are staying secure, but you still get to use all of these amazing pieces of tech if you want to?
Yeah. This is pulling a little bit from like 1990s conversation. So I will kind of go back. But there used to be something called war chalking. And so this is where back when the days of internet wasn't as readily available and accessible, you would have, you know, let's say it's a McDonald's, right? People would go by and they would actually, with a piece of chalk, kind of like make symbols on the outside of the building or the sidewalk that would indicate that there is free Wi-Fi here and here's the speeds and, you know, or, you know, some of the details around it. There's websites out there that as people would drive around, they'd have antennas in their car and they'd start mapping out, hey, where's all the free Wi-Fi? Those websites are still out there and you can still now do it with your phone instead of a radio antenna and that type of stuff. But there were people that were interested in gaining access to free Wi-Fi. If, I don't know if you live in an apartment complex, but open up the Wi-Fi list and look at the 75 different Wi-Fis that are out there. I know I've done this. I didn't want to, you know, pay for Wi-Fi when I first got into my apartment, or, you know, it was going to take a week for them to get out there, but I needed to be able to do my job. I either need to leave my apartment or see if someone left it open, right? What I would say is make sure that your home Wi-Fi at least has some type of password on it. That's not wildly guessable. So fall 2025 exclamation mark, not a great one. And don't think ahead or behind. No, it's actually summer or winter, right? Pick something unique. So
So 26 isn't better, even though it's in the future.
Exactly. Right. So just make sure you have that. It's when it comes to home, is there a strong financial gain for someone to compromise your network? Probably not, right? You know, that's why they target businesses typically. When you talk about home security, it's typically the accessibility and the availability that people are after, and just because they don't want to pay for that out of their own pocket for something. So if they can hop on, maybe access your Plex server, great. You know, now they have free movies, they have free internet. Just secure it. I think security people tend to fall into camps, right? It's the people that are the tinfoil hats, which I'm not trying to say that's bad, right? There are deep needs for privacy considerations. Then you have the other people that have no tinfoil hat at all and live life totally comfortable with that. In these cases, I think while privacy is really important, I think also like multi-factor, I have glasses that say multi-factor everything on it because it's that critical, right? Is your bank and your email should be the ones that have multi-factor at a minimum, right? Those are the two most critical accounts that you have. If someone gets into your Netflix and starts watching your movies, so be it. You know, it's not that important. You still don't want that. Yeah. But yeah, MFA, password managers, unique passwords. I just talked to my spouse again last night. I said, yeah, you have a password manager, right? And she's like, and I said, you're not using that memorized one that I know you use, right? She's like, no, that's in the password manager. I'm like, I made it halfway. I have more work to do. So.
Yeah, chiming in on this, the one that I guess there's a little bit of expansion I'll throw on some of the stuff that Nate's talking about, and I don't know how many people have them, but I know there's Wi-Fi garage door openers, there's people that are using smart locks and a variety of other things. Everything he just said applies to all of those as well, and to the point where I would say, and again, I'm paranoid, so bear with me, but your front door, if you've got a smart lock on it, might want to have a different pin on it than what you have for your garage door opener, if you've got the pin hanging on the garage, for reasons that, right, if it, maybe it's not a big deal. If you can get into one, you get in the other. But I would make them different. And then if there's a smart app that goes with it, which inevitably does, you got to make sure you've got multi-factor on it as well, too. Because, again, if somebody walks up to your door and goes, oh, hey, look, this is whatever smart lock, and I could have named one, but I'll leave it alone. Open up the app. Type in password fall 2025. I'm in. I would make sure that you've got an MFA on that so people can't get in. The other thing that I would do is as you're bringing your equipment online, because people do replace their TVs, their smart consoles, whatever. As you're bringing those on, do look at the privacy policy. You can typically opt out, and that would be the best time to do it. Going back is probably not terribly convenient. And then the other thing that I would do during your setup is make sure that you turn on auto updates, because even though I said more often they're not designed for the consumer, there is some that is, right? So there will be some critical updates, and you don't want to go through the mess of, does it make sense for me to determine whether this is something that's meaningful or not, and I'm patching a big vulnerability? Just go ahead and patch it. It will help you long term.
I will call out auto updates. I'm in the firm believer of do not put your smart TV on the internet. I think they take too much data, but I had to do it. I had to break last week and put one of my smart TVs on because, you know, our Apple TV wasn't working and my wife wanted to watch Dancing with the Stars. And that's very critical. So I had to put it on there, and it spent like 2 hours trying to update this TV. I was like, God, how much internet are they collecting on me right now? So got the Apple TV fix. It's turned back off.
So we don't need to talk about specific like brands, but when you are choosing or looking for, I need a new smart TV, I want a new smart watch, are there any specific things about data or security that you're looking into when you're choosing a product?
From my perspective, I would say that there are some minimum gotta haves. And so normally you can whittle those things out pretty quickly, but we've covered most of them, right? If you are getting into a situation, I actually am a big data privacy thing. I understand that a vast amount of my data has been breached over the years, unfortunately, but I still want to do the due diligence and try to protect it as much as reasonable. And so I do want to know that. So, for example, I am not an Apple guy, but I do know that their privacy policy is very robust. So that might be a deciding factor. And I know you said we didn't have to get into it, but that might be part of the decision factor that goes into some of the decisions on how I make them, is that might be part of it. But a lot of times, me, again, I'm a little bit more of a techie nerd. So I'm looking for certain functions and features, and that may be something less interesting in the cybersecurity world, like what's the refresh rate? Do I get Dolby Atmos sound when it comes to that? Those things are probably a bigger driver for me, but I do care about them. So they are in the decision factor at some level. It's just probably not as high up as some others, because again, consumer products are not designed to be that way. But being, again, a cybersecurity guy, I am doing other things to mitigate some of the risks that I go with it, separate networks, being careful about what I opt into and out of and that type of thing.
For me, I kind of mentioned it at the early onset of this podcast, was I try and limit it to certain vendors. So, you know, if I happen to use, again, I'm going to, everyone has an opinion on the vendors, but let's say I want to use Google for something and Apple for something. Do I want to go maybe pick up the smartwatch off of a cheap Chinese, you know, website or something like that, right? I have more reservations, you know, based off of stuff like that, right? Is I would prefer to use organizations that are more reputable, right? You know, and well-known, to Todd's point, have those big, you know, more robust privacy policies that I can actually go review. You don't always get that level of detail. The other ones are, I think, you know, GDPR, you know, I know this is more of a US-based thing, but GDPR, for those that don't know, it's the European privacy standard, essentially. And the EU also comes down very hard on these tech companies for the data that they collect and the consumer rights. And so I like to follow that to see which ones are regularly being beat down by those standards and being kind of held in check. Not everyone is trying to enter into the EU and still be able to maintain some of the same standards. So that's some of the stuff I look for.
We have a lot of businesses that listen to this podcast, and I know we're talking home, but with all of the remote workers, what is the crossover now of your home network and your work network and your devices? I mean, what is that conversation?
Yeah, we tend to work mostly in the small and medium-sized business vertical. And so there are certain things that I would like to see employees do that are working remote. So as I mentioned, you know, if you're getting a router, most routers, I'll use Google as an example, they have a stateful firewall built into it. So we do want to see at least some of those types of things in there. We do want to make sure devices are secure and whatnot. So there are a bunch of other things that you can do too on limiting access to your network. But those are some of the core things that I'd be looking for, is making sure that they're doing certain basic security hygiene at home. In theory, the reason why I mentioned this, in theory, organizations could say, the only way that I feel secure is if I'm going to provide X, Y, and Z technology to you. So not only do you just get the laptop, you also get this internet connectivity, and here's how we're going to have it all configured for you and so forth. In the SMB space, we don't see that a whole lot. It definitely is a significant improvement in cybersecurity. But typically what ends up happening for the vast majority of our customer base is it tends to be more endpoint specific, which is very agent oriented. So it's going to be your endpoint detection or response, your privilege access management. Those kinds of things are going to be on the devices themselves. So it's a lot easier to secure the device than it tends to be the home network. And that's how most organizations tend to go about it.
I have a relative that worked in operational risk at a large financial institution. During the pandemic, employees were not allowed to use their personal printers, right? You know, you're taking financial info, sticking on a home printer. Maybe there's a hard drive on there and it's interconnected with the internet. So to Todd's point, depending on the risk of the risk appetite of the organization, maybe you do need to provide your own level of, you know, hardware to be able to support a home environment. I do a lot of work with organizations right now on trying to limit the amount of inbound activity to their workstations. So we can audit, you know, especially if you're a CIT customer here, we can audit all of the inbound connections coming into your devices, and you would be surprised just how much scanning goes on, even in internal networks. So I just locked down a bank, right? And while we were doing this auditing, there's massive amounts of data for Windows Discovery Services and UPnP. So those are basically gaming, you know, UPnP is a way to, you know, also kind of connect and share data as well. Used heavily by things like your gaming systems, IoT, that type of stuff. And it is amazing just how much scanning that happens. There's employees out on, you know, a Starbucks Wi-Fi. And guess what? The other devices on that network are constantly trying to do their Windows Discovery to find other devices on similar networks. So if you are a business, especially if you are a CIT customer, connect with us to say, I don't want every other device to be able to scan and connect inbound to my devices, because the intention is that's not happening. The reality is it is. So how do we protect against it? And the nice thing is it's actually fairly low impact, right? Most of the time, because we can audit it, we can plan for it, and then you don't see the residual effects of doing it, because we can also say only trusted devices within your organization are allowed to do it. And again, it doesn't take that long to actually get configured. It's just the recognition that it needs to be done.
We went on a wild journey with this conversation today. Is there anything you were hoping to talk about or cover in this big umbrella conversation?
I would say not really for me. I mean, the big things, the big takeaways I have are treat your home network as your temple, right? You should do some things like making sure your passwords are fine. And again, make sure that your IoT stuff is Internet of Things. I don't know if we said that or not, but just in case we didn't, make sure those are on a separate network. But if you're doing those things, you're in a lot better place than most people. And then again, multi-factor everything. But hopefully you've been doing that all your life.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.